One's wrong, okay. Good afternoon. I'll call to order meeting the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, April 1, 2009. We still have to get one more member to get a quorum present, but we need to get started right now because we had a floor session that went spilled over into our time. We have a number of bills on the agenda today, and I notice we have a number of members of the public here who probably, and let the record reflect we do have a quorum. We have a number of bills on the agenda today, and I see that there's a number of members of the public that are here that probably are not usually here at the budget divisions. This is a budget division, which means that we are looking at bills that most of them, if not all of them, have already been through some sort of a policy committee. So we are not here to hear the policy arguments all over again. In fact, for instance, many of the members of this budget division are also on the state and local government operations and oversight committee, so they've heard the testimony of some of these bills already there. So as I say, we will not be rehearing the same testimony again. We are going to be mainly looking at the budget issues with the assumption that the policy committees have already approved the policy, and now we have to figure out what the funding implications are going to be. So to the extent that people are here to testify, please keep that in mind, that I will not be taking a lot of testimony on policy, but rather we need to talk about the budget issues. So the first item that we have on the agenda today is Senate File 915, Senator Dibble. It's Public Employees Insurance Program, School Districts Employee Health Insurance Coverage Purchase Requirement. Senator Dibble, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 915 is a subject that I'm guessing most of the committee is fairly familiar. It's the regular proposal that's been brought forward by the education community, those who represent school employees to try to make health care more accessible on a more affordable basis to school employees from around the state. This proposal, Mr. Chair, members, is different than previous proposals, and what it seeks to do is basically create a statewide health plan that's modeled on the state employee group insurance plan that we are all members of. What it would do is build on the already existing public employees insurance plan, now known as the PEEP, and bring all of those school employees in call it the School Employees Insurance Plan, the SEEP, and it would have a very, very similar, it would be very similar in construction to the CGIP that we're all very familiar with the various, it would be a self-insured plan, all of the various offerings and benefits that are very, we're familiar with, the basic providers, et cetera. It provides for a committee to work with the commissioner at MMB to help advise and design the program. It provides for, even though this is a self-insured plan, it does provide for MCHA assessments, not necessarily legally required, but done so on a voluntary basis, recognizing that MCHA, those who would need to fall into that high-risk plan, premiums would need to be paid so that plan is continues to be kept whole, provides for premiums to be paid for MinCare as well, et cetera, Mr. Chair. The costs of the program are described in a fiscal note that just arrived minutes ago, so we haven't had real time to evaluate what it calls for and where these expenses are all outlined and enumerated. Certainly some of the expenses will be related to the committee that's established. That committee would be comprised of four folks appointed by Education Minnesota, one appointed by the Service Employees International Union, one by AFSCME, and one by the Minnesota School Employees Association. The remainder would be appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association. And then we provide for regular reimbursement, et cetera, kind of the administrative costs that are associated with that committee. With that, Mr. Chair, that's a very high-level overview of the bill. The Office of Management and Budget has developed some expenses that are described in the fiscal note that relate to website development and communications and some of the meeting stuff, et cetera. as they mount the plan. Now, the intent is that the funds from the that are collected, you know, in premiums that become a part of this insurance fund would pay for all of that. There is a little bit of a challenge in timing, and that's what we need to solve here. As relates to the committee, we do have an amendment, the A2 amendment, that defers payment for those committee expenses until premiums start being collected. So I can.
Okay, the A2 amendment is being distributed right now. The preliminary fiscal note that we have, it shows on pages 5 and 6 that the costs in fiscal year 2010 are for consulting actuarial services, MMB staff, and so forth. And then that totals about $489,000 in fiscal year 2010. And then in fiscal year 2011, it shows about $736,000. Most of that goes to MMB staff. So the A2 amendment does what? The commissioner may not take any payment required until the employee has made an equivalent payment. Perhaps Mr. Bodden, could you explain what the amendment does, what the effect of it is?
Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 4 of the bill, it's actually most of it is shown on page 3, you'll see the school employee insurance committee is set up. Basically, what the amendment does is create a deferred obligation to pay the expenses for the committee that are required under paragraph C and referred to in the fiscal note. Those wouldn't be paid until a sufficient amount of school employee insurance program premiums had been made or had been paid.
Okay. Undoubtedly, that would affect the fiscal note. I mean, it's not going to make the cost go away. It might shift them into a later date. Senator Dibble, do you have anybody else who wants to talk about the budget part of the bill, not the policy, the budget part?
Lee Johansson from Education Minnesota, who can illuminate us or respond?
Mr. Chair, I'll just...
You need to identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Lee Johansson. I'm representing Education Minnesota. And thank you for the opportunity to talk to the committee today. I won't belabor the point other than say that the plan here is that the school employee insurance fund be self-funded. And, in fact, all of these costs would be paid for through premium dollars. The impact of this fiscal note on premiums would be, if paid off in the first year of premium collection, would be less than $5 per member per month. So it's not a burdensome overhead expense. And with that, I won't belabor the point any further. We think it's an important bill and an important process.
Well, just so I have a full understanding of it, is the plan then to not start the program until you've got sufficient funds to pay for the administration of it under the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, the bulk of the expense for startup is in the same fiscal year in which the premiums would be collected, so it would be paid for by the end of the year through the premiums collected. So in the end, it balances out.
Okay. We have the A2 amendment. Is there someone who wish to offer the A2 amendment? I guess we need a few minutes to absorb. Sarah Wolstein? Okay, Sarah Wolstein moves the A2 amendment. There's a discussion on the A2 amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment's adopted. Okay, is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on the budget aspects of Senate File 915? Sarah Dibble, come on forward. Is somebody here? Again, the budget only. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carol Neeters. I'm the Executive Director of SEIU Local 284, representing roughly 8,000 school support staff workers around the state. And what I want to talk to you is we're speaking in support of this, but the budget implications of this on the face of workers in school districts. And if we could have a minute to do that, would be helpful. I have two members here, one from Minneapolis and one from Hopkins, that just want to share their story.
I really will not be able to do that. I want to know about the fiscal note, how we're going to pay for the bill.
Okay.
Are you prepared to talk about how we're going to pay for this program through this budget? We're not going to take testimony on the need for the program. We don't have time to. I'll be happy to move Senator Dibble's bill to the end of the agenda. You can have whatever time is left available.
Okay. Well, we'll see at that time if we have a chance to come back up and speak to it.
Well, you may not have. We have a long agenda.
Sure, I'd rather we just act on the bill. And if you can just take note of all the wonderful SEIU people who are in the room.
Sure, I understand. But this bill's been through a number of committees that heard the testimony as to the need for it. We're trying to figure out how to pay for it. That's the charge of this budget division.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in relationship to costs, there's a lot of bargaining units in the education area. Would every bargaining unit have the ability to customize their terms of school and play health benefits? And if so, how would that affect the cost of a program like this?
Mr. Chair, certainly bargaining units would have the opportunity to bargain at the local level, some of the terms of participation, but the overall design would be a statewide design.
Okay. Senator Limmer, Mr. Johansson, anything further?
Could you repeat the question again?
Senator Limmer, could you repeat the question?
Would every bargaining unit in the school union world have the ability to customize the terms of their school employee health benefit package? Or is it a large program and there might be a panel that would speak on behalf of all of these employees, and that instead of getting into every single bargaining unit having a plank mixing in with their bargaining every year, are you going in that direction, or are you going more of a more global perspective to get a scale of cost savings, maybe?
Mr. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the benefit sets, the plans that outline the coverage, the locals can take a choice, or individuals within the local, if the local agrees to that through bargaining, of three plan designs. Each one progressively less comprehensive and therefore less expensive. The customization on the local level would be with regard to the premium split, whether the employer pays 75 or 85 or 90% or nothing, and then of course the remainder is paid by the employee. That's bargained collectively. Whether or not to offer all three plan designs, or whether to restrict the plan designs to one of the or two of the three, is a locally bargained option. I don't know necessarily why they would want to restrict, but it's certainly within their power. And then thirdly, who's insurance eligible? Whether somebody has to work 20 hours or 10 hours or 35 hours in order to be eligible for participation is a locally determined element.
Further discussion. Is there anybody else who is here who wants to talk about the fiscal impact of Senate File 915? Come on forward, please. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division. In my role, I oversee both the CGIP and the PEEP programs, and would be largely responsible for administering this proposed program. I think the fiscal note essentially is fairly self-explanatory in terms of the costs related to MMB. And as Mr. Johansson had indicated, the fiscal note is really based on the costs that the program would likely occur before the premiums are collected. We're not addressing any of the costs related to the program once it is up and running. That being the cost to administer the program, the costs related to managing the reserves, and I just simply wanted to note that. A couple other things just to note quickly would be that the state really doesn't have any particular representation in this group. just I think that's important to note. Excuse me.
Well, that's a policy issue that's beyond this budget
divisions. And we also are uncertain of the impact to the existing PEEP group. The existing PEEP group is currently comprised of about 50% of the groups are already K through 12 districts. we're not certain what the fiscal impact to the remaining PEEP group would be. And with that, I'll make myself available for questions.
Yeah, Mr. Morocco, did you have a chance to see or review the 8-2 amendment that was adopted to delay the payments until the insurance program has made an equivalent payment? Have you had a chance to look at that yet?
Mr. Chair, I have not had a chance to look at it. I think I understand the concept, and I would agree that that would alleviate some of the costs that are currently in the fiscal note.
Okay, so that might cause a revision in the fiscal note, is what? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would fully expect that it would. There are probably some costs that we can't defer.
Sure.
If we obviously need to pay vendors or consultants or things of that nature, but certainly costs related to the board itself, if they're willing and are mandated to defer the costs, certainly that would save the program the expense until it starts collecting premiums.
Well, Senator Dibble, I've got a question then for you that we can hold the bill here in the budget division until we can see the impact of this fiscal note, or I can report the bill back to the Finance Committee because it does have to be reviewed by the Human Services Budget Division as well, too, and they would have the benefit of seeing the bill with a revised fiscal note, but we would not. Do you have a preference as to which way we go here? Because, as I said, the bill's not going to stay as part of our omnibus bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I prefer that we just keep it moving.
Okay. It is possible we may have to pull it back in if the fiscal note is something that can't be paid for. I mean, I'll just have to work with you and Senator Cohen to figure that out. But we'll move it to the Finance Committee, I think, and then just see what the fiscal note ultimately says. Senator Rest. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on the fiscal part of this bill? Or any questions? Senator,
One other question I have, Chair, is Senator Dibble, does this bill require post-retirement health coverage, or would that be subject to collective bargaining as well?
Mr. Chair, I believe not. This bill is silent on that question, so that would be the subject of bargaining, I assume.
Mr. Johansson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, under current law, retirees are required to be allowed to stay in the insurance policy of active employees. Who pays their premiums is subject to local negotiations.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state, and I just want to reply to the question on retirees. One of our big concerns with this bill is how do we provide that health insurance for those retirees? Now, that may not be a plan that this pool even has in it. And if, in fact, the market, how do you, by case law, we have to provide the identical program they retired under. And that may not be available under this plan. It's not clear quite how that would be handled. Also, we've got concerns on the benefit requirements. 471-6161 says that we cannot arbitrarily lower benefits. And this bill would make us go into three plans initially. We have about 300 around the state. And it's not clear how we'd make that transition process into the three plans, much less whatever the committee would decide as an outcome for that product. And collective bargaining really isn't the best place to do those decisions.
Yeah, well, and again, it's not the purpose of this division to restructure the bill. It's try to figure out how to pay for it as it's presented to us. And that's the issue we have before us. So if there's nothing further, Senator Rest moves that Senate File 915, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Finance to be recommended passed. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, members, Senator Saltzman apparently is unavailable at this moment. Is Senator Cohen here? I was told that. Oh, there he is. Okay. Senator Cohen, let's go to Senate File number 2. And if those who are leaving could do so quietly, we're going to be starting to take up another bill. Senator Cohen, welcome to the Budget Committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. This is a bill, much of which was authored last year, which deals with
Please leave quietly. Thank you. Go ahead.
Which deals with how we structure the budget, how we structure reporting of the budget. Mr. Chairman, if you could help me out, I'm not sure. Just trying to think of where we were last year procedurally in terms of the full committee versus the division as to how much you want to hear of the bill from where we left off from last year. There are a couple of new sections, Section 9, I believe, and Section 11. We've reworked a little bit of language. Do you want me to go through the bill or what?
The Senate file number 2 itself is fairly short. What I would like to propose to do, members, is there's a couple of other bills that have been in this budget division, and you've got a list of some other bills that we've looked at, and it's my thinking of just amending the bills into Senate file 2 today. Now, actually, I see one is Senator Waugh's bill, and she's not here, why don't you briefly review what is in Senate File 2, and then we'll go from there with some other things that we can help you on your way.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, just going through the bill, what it attempts to do is, and this is something that I've worked on off and on over the years, where we, I think, unfortunately don't get enough budget information presented to the legislature, and this is an ongoing fight. And in fact, I see Mr. Mossman walked in. I'm going to ask him if he might join me up here since he's helped in working on this language. This is an ongoing fight with the administration. I want to make it very, very clear. This is not an ongoing fight with the present administration. This is an ongoing fight with every administration, irrespective of party or decade. The executive branch, for various various obvious reasons, understandable reasons, prefers that some of this information be kept within the executive branch, does not necessarily share a lot of the budget information with the legislative branch. It makes it a little bit tougher for us to do our jobs in terms of the promulgation of a budget. One of the things, Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow just a parenthetical note, one of the things that I wondered if we ought to do and then came to the conclusion that it would not be a good idea was to establish a legislative budget office along the lines of the Congressional Budget Office. In Washington, you've got the OMB in terms of the executive branch. You've got the CBO in terms of the legislative branch. I wondered if maybe this would be something appropriate. And as I looked at our structure, where we have a very good set of fiscal analysts who advise both on the House side and the Senate side, where we have a state economist who everybody trusts, whose promulgation of the forecast is not questioned by anybody, irrespective of party or ideology or House, Senate, executive branch, that to establish a separate CBO or LBO would be reinventing the wheel in that respect. But having said that, there are some places where I think it's appropriate for us to look for more information. So what the bill does is first establish language that would allow the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy to promulgate a budget, to do so in conjunction with recommendations coming from agencies, to provide there's a section that I think has been popular with some members that would provide Section 3 local impact notes, similar to the fiscal notes we get for state funding requests. We also ask for more budget information. I think a very important section of this is the section that Sections 4 and 5 that have a 3-year look back in terms of budgets. One of the things that is clear is that when we look at the budget pages, and I've had this debate with some of the folks from the administration as to whether or not in past years we had more information. And, Mr. Chairman, as you know, I chaired a variation of this division for a number of years. And if I look back to the budget pages I had when I was first chairman of State Departments in 1993, we were getting much more detailed information coming from the executive branch. So this asks for a three-year look back, both in terms of the actual expenditures as well as estimates for the current years. It asks for more detailed information as contained in Section 7, and again, this relates to the same issue as to whether or not we can see what's a proposed, the governor's recommendation, what's the agency recommendation. We always used to see that information, and obviously you can make the argument that an agency is not necessarily going to say, well, we recommend doubling our expenditures, and the governor says, no, you're not, that the agency wants that reported contrary to what the governor has recommended. But we have seen that information in the past, and I do think it provides some opportunity to draw a comparison to see what an agency may or may not do. And I realize most agencies will ask for more by way of appropriations, not less, but whatever direction it is, to see more of that information. We also ask that to look at some type of, in Part E, a spending trend analysis for the programs to, again, show what we've had by way of actual spending and what might be expected by way of new spending. Section 8 requests that the deficiency requests come to us a little bit more quickly because we've always had confusion where we have a deficiency request. It comes up at the time we're putting together the budget. We have to start going back and forth in terms of what's at the bottom line, what do we cover, what do we not cover. I have an amendment that cleans up the language of Section 9, which is whether or not executive branch employees are responsible, not responsible to us as employers, but responsible to us in providing information in a timely way. That, again, lends itself to this question of why I would argue we don't need a separate legislative budget office, but if we have a little bit more give and take with the executive branch employees, and I'm not talking about people at an unclassified level where you're dealing with some significant political decisions, but just in terms of the day-to-day operation. There's also, this language was in the bill last year, Section 10, a whistleblower language that was cleaned up in Senator Ress's Policy Committee. We also have the language in Section 11 that's more at a staff level in terms of a budget working group to, again, work on the availability of this information, what form it comes to us, and has the commissioner in chairing this committee, and this is a joint executive legislative working group. My expectation would be that this would be a staff level. You wouldn't have legislators. I mean, if legislators so chose to participate, they could. My expectation would be that I would prefer to have the respective staffs working on this. This is not meant to be a political request at all. So, Mr. Chairman, those are the descriptions of what's in the present Senate File 2. Again, I have an amendment to Section 9 that I hope the committee would consider.
We are distributing the 8. Is it the A2 amendment?
Yes.
Page 5, delete Section 9. So that is now, I believe, before the division members. So, Senator Cohen, could you describe what it does?
As I mentioned, it makes sure that classified employees are able to be, it suggests in 1.5, nonpartisan resources for information analysis, et cetera. The amendment itself cleans up the language that's in the present bill. It doesn't change the substance. It's just much cleaner language than what's contained in the bill right now. And so what it does is make sure that people in the executive branch, again, not commissioners, not deputy commissioners, those sorts of employees, but people are available to us to help us in the promulgation of the budget, that they work in a nonpartisan, classified way in terms of providing information. So the amendment cleans up the language that's in the bill. It doesn't change the substance.
Mr. Chair? Senator Limmer. Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, on the A2 amendment, that's what we're discussing now. One of the questions I have, and I can see where the direction is to have a perhaps a little bit more balanced and effective workplace, but we're making a policy now that's stretching over kind of the separation of powers, the executive branch and legislative branch, two distinctly different functions of government, and yet at the same time they both share a desire to have effective and efficient research and advising staff, but I believe that to make government work, you kind of need to, at times, you need to have a certain tension between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And I'm just wondering why this is necessarily necessary. Why is it necessary to have this kind of forced work relationship when the branches are so much different from one another?
Sir Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, a couple things. First of all, this doesn't affect, you talk about a tension between the executive and legislative branch. This doesn't affect in any respect the people at a higher level of management within the agencies. I don't expect that they're available to be of support to the legislative branch. We already work, if we take the supposition carried to an extreme in your initial comment, then we'd have no access whatsoever at any time, at any place, to people in the executive branch. Now, that's clearly not the case. There are people in the executive branch within the agencies who are helpful and who spend time with us. So if you wanted that total demarcation, you would change things significantly from the way they are right now. This language, I think, simply clarifies what is present practice to make sure it's known and expected, so that if you do have a commissioner, and I can't say that this is hypothetical, I can't think of a situation where this has been the case, where a commissioner has said to employees, don't talk to legislators under any circumstance, that if you had that kind of hypothetical, this language would clarify that, no, that's not to be the case. Now, I don't expect the executive branch employee, even a classified employee, to start talking about trade secrets or significant discussions within the agency, significant discussions within the office of the commissioner. We're not talking about putting people under oath, subpoenaing them, or anything of that sort. We're simply making it clear that that they are available to us for information, analysis, and advice. But it clarifies that. So in those exceptional situations where a commissioner doesn't provide staff for that purpose, the language will deal with that.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Limmer.
If the roles were reversed and if, let's say, you were a governor, could you, under this proposal, ask a researcher or a committee coordinator to come into the governor's office and seek information on what was said during an analysis on a problem in government and expect an answer? Is that appropriate for, let's say, Governor Plenty to seek the presence of one of our researchers to come before him and give information?
So,
without even the approval of that particular researcher's superior?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, without answering the question directly, let me just suggest that I think you misread the intent of this. We're a legislative body. We pass laws. We pass a budget. We're not necessarily the best place for the collection of lots of information or the day-to-day workings of whatever the issue might be. That's not to say that, say, within, as an example, Senate Counsel and Research, that might be the best example, that we don't have highly competent people who are very knowledgeable in their areas. This might be unfair, but he's been my fiscal analyst in the past. Mr. Lundin, as an example, at the head of the table, is very, very knowledgeable in the operation of the agencies and departments within the jurisdiction of this division. And in that context, has some ideas, thoughts, many things he's worked on. But his information, I could argue, you know, maybe not his advice, but his information could be duplicated within the agencies. he's there for us to interpret what's going on in the agencies, to maybe draw out the point. And the reason I talk about a decision on my part that creating a legislative budget office, as an example, would be a duplication and inadvisable is that there should be other ways we can get access to information. We're not the size of the federal government. And all this intends to do is to make sure that we get information, analysis, thoughts, not the disclosure of what's going on in terms of policy considerations. In fact, there's a line at the bottom that says that does not authorize or require an employee to disclose data that is not public data. So there's protection for the kind of considerations that I think you raise. This is meant to simply provide advice, consultation, information to the legislature. The executive branch has thousands of employees. We have a staff that, though highly competent, is stretched quite thinly. If I can tell you, come the middle of May, middle of April, as chairman of the Finance Committee, I might be able to get access to Mr. Lundeen. But I'll only suggest to you that there's only so many hours in the day. And Mr. Lundeen, I'm sorry for using you as the example. You're just sitting. I could use Mr. Bodern as well, I guess, but you're sitting there. But I think the reality is that when Senator Betzold is putting his division bill together, or when he's in conference committee, the access of Mr. Lundeen to a more junior member of the legislature who's not on the State Department's division is going to be close to non-existent, just because there's so many hours in a day. And there are many more executive branch employees who, if, again, that hypothetical, the more junior member of the legislature wants to inquire about something, they can get access to that person. Our staff we're not overstaffed in terms of that kind of expertise at all. So that's why I suggest this language provides that clarification. And it's distinguished from your situation.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Limmer.
Getting back to my question, Senator Cohen, the way I read this on the amendment, if I could guide you through it, but in a paraphrasing way, state employees in the classified service are expected to be nonpartisan resources for information, analysis, and advice to elected officials and their staffs in both the executive and legislative branches of government. To me, that does not create a separation of powers. It becomes a blur between powers. And that a governor could ask for a researcher in the legislative branch to come before him and talk to him about the areas of information or analysis and advice. And I'm just trying to determine if I was the researcher, if I was the employee in the classified service, who's my boss? And can I refuse to give information? If I do, what are the consequences? Who would protect me if I thought that my responsibility to what I perceived as my employer, perhaps the branch of government that I was employed under, or perhaps I was a researcher working on behalf of a chairman of a committee or a leader of a caucus. I, as an employee, would be rather uncomfortable with that, and I wouldn't know who my boss really was in the event that I was called into someone else's branch of government and then expected to give information, analysis, or advice. I guess maybe I'm just more of a purist on separation of powers, and I think it functions well when it is separate.
Well, Senator Limmer, if we had the funding, I suppose we could have our own Office of Management and Budget, so we could hire our own group to do it. We have to rely, the legislature does have to rely upon the executive branch. I don't know whether this amendment is related to it or not, but at the Commission of Policy and Fiscal Analysis recently, Senator Berglund raised a concern. She said, the people who they work for the executive branch, they have to prepare our fiscal notes, they have to, help us do it. But they work for the governor and they work for the legislature. It isn't that they work for the governor first, and later on when they have time, they'll get our work out of the way. And when we're not getting our fiscal notes, we can't do our work on time. So I think that who they work for, clearly they're executive branch employees, but unless or until the legislature has its own budget office, they're going to have to help us and do the job. They work for both the legislature and the executive branch, even though their job is within the executive branch. I think that's one of the issues that we have to deal with. Senator Limmer?
Well, Mr. Chair, sometimes those administrations, as well as the leadership of a particular legislative branch, are at odds with one another, and quite often the employees that are hired as staff or research personnel are doing the job that they're told to do by the actual people that are elected to office. And sometimes those goals and those directives are at odds with a different branch of government. That happens often.
But, Senator Limmer, to the extent that we're talking about the nonpartisan resources, it shouldn't matter, who, political party or anything. I mean, the people whose job it is to do fiscal notes should be doing it in a nonpartisan manner. They should be preparing the information for their employers in the executive branch, but they also have an obligation in the legislative branch because we don't have those kind of resources to do it. We can't get fiscal notes unless the executive branch employees, the nonpartisan employees, do them for us. So I think that's one of the issues we're trying to get at here. Any other questions here? Any other comment on it? Does anybody wish to move the A2 amendment?
I'll
move it. So we'll see who moves the A2 amendment. Further discussion on the A2 amendment. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I'm just looking at the R expected. If the expectation is that they must be nonpartisan and must provide the information, how come we're softening it that much as to say they just are expected to do it?
Why they are to be expected? Is it?
It's line 4 of the amendment.
Yes,
they should.
Is it the term "expected" that is troubling? Or is that? I'm not quite sure.
Well, yesterday we had something like this in higher ed. Do we direct or do we just expect?
Right.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and perhaps the word "are expected" might be a little bit awkward. Maybe there's a better way to say that they are, to respond or whatever to both executive and legislative branch. I'm not sure if the words "are expected" is the right word, but that's what we have before us at the moment. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, that language was drafted, and again, the substance of what's in the A2 amendment is already in the bill. This language was a reworking of the language to make it somewhat better. The "are expected," in effect, I think, deals with Senator Limmer's concern that rather than make this a mandate, state employees shall, during their work hours, are expected, so that there is some softening, so there's some ability to make sure that where somebody has other responsibilities, they don't drop everything when they get a call from a state legislator. So I think if you keep that in mind with the comments made by the chairman, that I would hope would alleviate concerns about this language.
Okay. Senator Olstein moves the A2 amendment. Is there further discussion on the A2 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a description of the bill as I've authored it. Now, there has been some discussion of amending this bill to include some other legislation. Senator Rest, I believe, has...
Well, let me first. I'll note that we do have a fiscal note on your bill. It appears to be fairly minimal, but it is a fiscal note of about $8,000
yes.
in 2010 and about $28,000 in 2010 as well, too. So,
Mr. Lindy,
No, the only cost, I think the $28,000 that the chair is referring to can be absorbed within the LCC.
Okay, because that's part of the legislature. I see. So it's $8,000, basically.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I can comment on that, I had indicated, you know, there was some confusion with some of these bills within the full committee, and this bill was not, the whole bill would be referred to the full committee. My intent had been to eliminate that section of the bill because my argument has been, we're not covering in this year additional costs, and I'm going to hold myself the same standard I'd hold anybody else to. There has been some further discussion. That's why I started to indicate that it's my understanding that there might be the desire on the part of some other authors, and Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure about your perspective, to add some other language, correct, other bills to this bill, making it more of an omnibus.
Well, yes, Senator Cohen, we have had other bills in this budget division, in fact, some that were heard finance last week, that have some costs, and I laid them over because I don't quite have the funding for them, but I'm happy to add those to your bill with another possibility of finding a way to pay for them as well, too. So we members, we've got I don't have the bills back before you, but just a summary sheet here that we had Senate File 57, which was Senator Rest's bill on the Minnesota Management and Budget Commissioner duties modification, basically telling the, you know, some of us believe that they should be doing the things already without additional cost. Senator Rest, comment on your bill again.
Mr. Chairman, you succinctly summarized it. I don't need to comment further.
So Senator Rest, did you wish to move Senate File 57 as an amendment to Senate File 2?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's my motion.
Okay. Is there discussion on that motion? What is this? Okay. Senator Rest moves to incorporate Senate File 57 into Senate File 2. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Then we also had Senate File 91, which was Senator Rest's bill. That was a searchable database bill. And again, we did not have the funding for it. Senator Rest, did you wish to have that incorporated in this bill as well,
yes,
too?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move that the language of Senate File 91 be included in the language of Senate File 2.
Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. We have an amendment, 85. What is this? What's this been?
That is Senate File 57, as it was amended.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you have the language of Senate File 57.
A5
okay.
Is 57.
Okay. Well,
as amended.
Right. Let us.
You want to take that?
Let me. Okay. I didn't realize we're going to hand out the amendments to do this. Senator Rest, having voted on the prevailing side, moves that we reconsider the vote on Senate File 57. On the motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Now we have the A5 amendment, which was the amended language of Senate File 57. So Senator Rest moves the A5 amendment. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rest moves to reconsider the vote of Senate File 91 into the omnibus bill. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rest moves the A6 amendment, which is the language of Senate File 91 as amended. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay. We have, let's see. I believe we thought about having Senator Moore's bill, which we have not yet heard because that's next on the agenda. So at some point, that might be rolled in here, too. There's a list. Senator Clark has a bill that's on the agenda as well, too, but I'm told that she would prefer to have that go separately. I do have an amendment. Do we have any other amendments to go into the bill yet that we're aware of? Okay. I've got the A4 amendment, and if we can have that passed. Well, one's A4 and one's A7. They look similar, so. Okay, A7 amendment. The A7 amendment. The last couple of years, Senator Cohen has had a proposal to eliminate a number of deputy commissioner and assistant commissioner positions. And last biennium, that was offered in the Finance Committee to the state government budget bill. And so I had to carry it. So, anticipating that might come up again, I decided that, well, I would offer Senator Cohen the opportunity to carry his proposal forward, so as a means of paying for the proposals that we've just adopted. So, Senator Cohen, the A7 amendment would be to reduce the unclassified positions in various agencies. Mr. Bodron, are you able to identify which agencies are affected here? Or can somebody identify which ones there?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, if I could get a copy of the amendment.
Could somebody bring a copy down, Senator Cohen? Please.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can walk you through it fairly
quickly. Could you do that, yes?
Quickly. Section 1 is a general section that serves as a limit on all state agencies and basically removes a specific authorization for additional deputy commissioners. Section 2 applies to the, I believe that's the Commissioner of Administration, and limits, reduces the amount of deputy commissioners by one. And Section 3 refers to, well, it's removing an obsolete reference to the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning. And we may need, I'll have to take a look back at page 1, line 24. The reference to Subdivision 1A may need to be reinstated. Section 4 applies to the Commissioner of Commerce. Section 5 applies to the Commissioner of Natural Resources. Section 6 is the Pollution Control Agency. And I believe Section 7 is the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And then I'm going to need to check on a couple of the others. I believe Section 9 is that's Labor and Industry, I think. And then Section 10 is the Commissioner of Corrections. And then Section 11 provides the appropriation reduction to reflect the total savings from the reduction of the positions that would be eliminated in this amendment.
And members and Senator Cohen, given the fact that, you know, we are talking about cuts in state government, however this is going to go without any new revenue, the fact that apparently the executive branch is talking about furloughing employees as a cost-saving measure, I think it's appropriate to put everything on the table. So, Senator Cohen, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would agree. And obviously, as you indicate, this is a proposal that I have presented before. In the context of this bill, and I understand the committee action in terms of inclusion of some of these proposals, we need to pay for them as well. So not only is this kind of a share the pain effort that I would suggest to the legislature, but it also has the dual purpose of making sure that, at least in the case of this particular bill, that we paid for it. I also understand that it doesn't match up dollar for dollar, and the money would then go to the bottom line, which is a little bit short right now anyways. So I would hope members would accept
And Senator Cohen, since this amendment crosses a number of agencies, obviously, who are not here, I think that they would be aware of this by the time it gets to the Finance Committee, but to the extent that it might affect any agencies that are in the room, like Commissioner of Administration, if they wish to comment now, they can do so. If they would prefer to wait until the bill comes before the Finance Committee, I guess that's appropriate, too. There will be opportunity, I would suspect, in the Finance Committee to do that. So
yes,
if anybody
sure.
wishes to comment on it, we can certainly take that now. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling, I'm sorry.
I'm thinking that, you know, you said the governor has suggested furloughs, but are we going to put that in the bill, too, so it's all open for discussion? Would we be open for an amendment like that?
Senator Roebling, it's my understanding that the furlough proposal is something that is being suggested as part of the collective bargaining process. The legislature usually tries to avoid injecting itself into the collective bargaining process, so I don't know where that's going to go.
Sure.
But that is a proposal that is made as part of that particular process. I suppose nothing prevents any legislator from offering anything to affect, you know, if that's what a legislator wishes to propose over and above that, that's fine. But I would hope the legislature does not inject itself in the bargaining process. But, you know, we can offer ideas that might be parallel to that, I guess. But as I say, the bill would have to go to the Finance Committee from here, so and you serve on the Finance Committee, so you may have an opportunity to, you know, ponder that. Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, you made the mention, or you mentioned that the appointment issue regarding deputy commissioners and other adjustments to the executive branch was an effort to share the pain. But what part of that share the pain part on the other side of negotiations is reflected in this amendment? Is there anything referring to legislative employees sharing the pain or public workers sharing the pain or anything else other than just the executive branch?
Well, Mr. Cohen, the Chairman, Senator Limmer, not in this particular amendment, but the reality is that this division has a very severe budget target. There will be significant cuts to the legislative budget. There will be significant cuts everywhere. So simply because it's not reflected in a particular bill doesn't mean it's not going on. And I think you're well aware of that. Mr. Chairman, you can comment better when your division bill is presented to your division and to the full committee. But as an example, you're going to have a significant cut, I would anticipate, to the state senate.
Sarah Cohen, apparently the I don't know if this is – I believe it's in law or that the Committee on Rules Administration has to make its recommendation on the Senate's budget before we receive it.
Yes.
The Senate has already taken a 3% cut in its base, and the governor's proposing a 5% cut to everybody. So, in effect, for the Senate, that would mean an 8% cut. If we adopt the governor's recommendation for 5%. So we've already taken our 3%, and if we take a 5% on top of that, that's 8%. But as I say, we have to – this budget division has to wait until the Rules Committee makes its recommendations that will then come before this budget division. And I believe they're going to do that this week.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wimmer.
Senator Cohen, I'm not on your committee, and I just want to have an opportunity just to ask, is it your direction to, in order, in the event that cuts are necessary, are you looking at it more of cutting positions or perhaps looking at it in a different way in the cuts to maybe just reduce the overall salary of everyone? At least people can keep their jobs, they can keep their health benefits, and not have such a large decrease or an increase in layoffs, which would certainly put some people in dire straits rather than having the whole of government absorb at least all of it, you know, share the pain generally.
Sir Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I will not speak for division chairman, and I think that's going to vary from division to division. I can tell you, though, looking at the totality of the budget, it's going to be a combination, and there will be significant job displacement given the size of the deficit. It's just inevitable. I think each place is going to handle things in a different way. I mean, I don't mean to focus, say, on the Senate budget, but constitutionally we have 67 state senators. We're not going to eliminate four state senators from the state Senate. On the other hand, will there be an impact in terms of legislative benefits? Quite possibly. Will it certainly affect staff? Absolutely. You know, we already have terminated some staff here. So as finance chairman, I'm not going to issue a one-size-fits-all in terms of how the individual chairs and divisions promulgate their division budgets. But certainly there are going to be layoffs.
Is there anybody else who's here wants to be heard on the A2 amendment, or A7 amendment? As I say, it'll be heard in the Finance Committee at some point, so we don't need to take testimony here, but if anybody wants to, they may do so. Further discussion? Senator Roebling.
I was just going to make sure. I think I heard most of the departments, Mr. Bodden, said that where they were having assistant commissioners cut. You didn't say anything about education or health and human services, did you, the larger agencies?
Mr. Barter?
Mr. Chairman, no, I did not. I will point out that the language in Section 1 is applicable to all agencies. So if this amendment were adopted, if this language were enacted, any department or agency would be prohibited from having more than one deputy. Sure.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Roebling.
I do see that as problematic for some of our bigger agencies. I think that, you know, education and health and human services certainly can use a few more top managers because they're, the extent of what they oversee is significant. And so I would say that there should be some exceptions made for some of those at least.
Well, I think the agencies also need auditors, you know, and they've been cutting them. They're cutting their workforce. If we wind up just having to keep cutting and cutting, at some point, you know, we can't just leave the managers and cut all everybody else. It's, you know, where are we going? So, further discussion on the A7 amendment. Does somebody want to move it? Senator Rust moves the A7 amendment. Is there a discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. As I said, we have two other bills that are still on our agenda that are candidates to be rolled into Senate File 2. That's File 407 and Senate File 1230. Sarah Cohen, it's my intention at the moment to lay the bill over momentarily so we can take up your other bill on the deficiency or the stimulus oversight. So does anybody else have anything further at the moment for Senate File number 2? If not, then let's temporarily lay Senate File 2 over and then move on to Senate File 1938. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Finance Committee has heard the deficiency bill that involved primarily Department of Human Services and the Office of Emergency Planning. That was passed out of the Finance Committee. We passed it off the floor late Thursday afternoon. This was a request that came to us later, and it deals with the federal stimulus monies. We have monies that are coming from the federal government just in significant numbers to the state of Minnesota, both in terms of monies directed to the state government and monies directed to local governments. And this is a request that has come to us from both the Department of Management and Budget as well as the state auditor. I should make it clear that the request from both offices is larger than what's represented in this proposal, but the thought I had was to provide money right now that I would hope would take care of where we would be for the rest of this calendar year, not the fiscal year, and make sure that both offices are in a position to stay on top of what's going on. I'll just give you, Mr. Chairman, a quick example. We were going to hear the K-12 bill in the Finance Committee tomorrow. There's every expectation at this point that we will not hear the bill. The reason is that this morning new directions came in from the federal government, the OMB, to the state governments relative to how you handle the stimulus money for education. And the regulations are such that it might affect our budget targets for both K-12 and higher ed. Again, that showed up this morning unexpectedly. So we really don't have any place to stay on top of this, and particularly when the legislature adjourns and the money's coming in to the executive branch, there's that much less oversight. So I think the requests from both offices are reasonable. I should also mention, relative to the auditor's request, a lot of the money coming in from the federal government circumvents the state government. We don't see it at all. It doesn't come through the executive branch to the Office of Management and Budget to the state agencies. It goes directly to local governments and local school districts. And those monies have absolutely no oversight whatsoever unless there is additional support directed to the state auditor's office, which has the constitutional jurisdiction for management and auditing of those budgets. So these are requests that I think are reasonable. The language makes reference directly to the stimulus money, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and I think the requests from both agencies are reasonable and reasonable as a deficiency request, so that we need to do this now as opposed to dealing with it in our regular budget process with legislation that might be signed, hopefully, at the end of the legislative session by the governor. Now, I do think there's every chance both offices will come back to this division for further requests during the promulgation of the budget, but we would have more time to look at those requests when we're doing the totality of the budget for both departments. So that's the request, and again, one I think made by both offices, that's a reasonable one. Now, we do have people available. The budget director is here. Right. Mr. Showalter and the auditor is here as well.
I see the state auditor is here, and if somebody from MMB is available, if they want to describe it. I think the issue is fairly straightforward. We've got all this federal money coming in, but there was no appropriation from the federal government to track it. And, you know, the state auditor has to track it on the local level. MMB has to track the state dollars, but they have to figure out how the resources are going to come to do it because they don't have them inherently now. So as the state auditor wants to come forward, Sir Pappas, do you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, does this money come out of our budget target
then? Sir McCullen?
Mr. Chairman,
is charged?
Mr. Chairman, a very good question. The answer is that when we put together the budget the last couple of days, there was money at the bottom line for this legislation as presented in Senate File 1938 in terms of the dollar amounts. If Senate File 2 passes the full Finance Committee with the amendment that was offered by, I forget who actually offered the amendment, but the amendment was just put on, there's actually a little bit more money at the bottom line, which is advisable. We talked about that, you know, last night, Senator Pappas. But this money was already tracking. Because, Mr. Chairman, I had thought, and maybe I should just offer procedurally where this was, for members of the division who don't serve on the full Finance Committee. I actually had the bill scheduled for hearing, and I should also add another note, Mr. Chairman. I actually had the bill scheduled for hearing in the full Finance Committee, realized, and this was a little bit rushed, and I think for good reasons, and hadn't sent it to the division, realized it should go to the division. So I pulled the language out of the deficiency bill we passed last week, with the intent that this division would hear this language. I should also mention there is another deficiency request that's shown up relative to the federal stimulus money, which is a human service issue. Senator Berglund has indicated she does not wish to have that heard in her division. So if this bill passes out of the division, it's heard tomorrow on the Finance Committee, I would have an amendment to the bill, but it would be strictly a human service issue, not a State Department's issue.
Well, and I talked to Senator Cohen and thought that it was appropriate that this budget division hear the request because, again, this only takes care of this current fiscal year. There's going to be, for quite a while, after the fiscal year ends, there's still going to have to be tracking done by both MMB and the state auditor, and we wanted to find out just, you know, how they were going to be equipped to pay for it since they both come under this budget division. So, Auditor Otto, did you wish to make any further comments?
Mr. Chair, would you like me to?
If you wish to. If you think we've covered everything, go ahead.
Sure.
Identify yourself, though.
Yeah, so for the $384,000 in the deficiency bill, you know, we're going to need to be able to respond in a very prompt manner if there's misuse of funds, as I think the federal government's made very clear and Obama's made clear that. And so this would allow us to have staff. We're very, very busy right now, unfortunately, in that division. And we need to be able to respond in a prompt manner and get on top of these things right away if there is misuse of funds. And at this point, it would be very difficult for us to do with our workflow right now. So this would at least get us in a much better position so that we can, because there's money flowing right now to local government. And there's also, from what I understand, we've been doing conference calls as state auditors with the GAO. And from what I understand, there's different whistleblower protection as well for these funds. It's quite broad, and so we have to make sure that our systems are ready for that as well, and we handle it appropriately because we'll have to determine where the funds have come from. So,
Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chair, members, thanks for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director, and the committee already heard from our department, I think it was last week, time sort of merges together, about this issue. In short, what's before you is $700,000 of the $1.6 million that we've requested to help us start to address the reporting and tracking requirements that are coming along with the stimulus funds, as well as get a head start on some of the internal controls and other kinds of accounting work that's going to be needed for these stimulus dollars. All of these new federal monies are going to have to be handled separately. They're going to have to be tracked not only as we would normal federal money, but at a heightened standard beyond that. And that the reporting requirements actually are due, the first reporting is due, I think, July 10th or 15th. So
one way or another, we're just starting to get guidance from OMB as to what exactly they want, as well as how they want it, and we will need to start working the next couple of weeks, literally, to provide that information. So appreciate your support.
Any questions of the state auditor or Mr. Showalter? Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 1938? Is there a motion? Senator Rust moves that Senate File 1938 be recommended passed to the Finance Committee. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Cohen. As I say, we'll take up Senate File 2 again, but only so that we can hear two other bills, possibly for amendments there. And so I don't know that you're certainly welcome to stick around, but I don't know that if your work is done on that one, we can let you know what happened, if that's what you wish is.
Okay, and that's fine, Mr. Chairman. I'll be in my office, I believe, if
you need to come back to for anything. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you. I saw both Senator Clark and Senator Moore. Are they both gone?
Yeah.
I haven't authored any. And I'll take up my bill then. So. Okay. Why don't we see if we can find Senator Moore and Senator Clark? Do we have? You have a bill? Oh, you're. Yeah, Senator Rust, why don't you do yours? Yeah, why don't you do that? 1600, right? Yes, yes, yes. Oh, we're waiting on an amendment. Okay. So we'll hold off. Let's do. Do I have somebody from the Secretary of State's here? Bert Black is here? Okay, yeah. Why don't you come forward, Mr. Black? And Senator Olsen, you need to come here or get the gavel or something.
Welcome to the State Budget Committee,
well,
Senator Betzel.
It's a pleasure to be here. Senate File 1224 is a bill from the Secretary of State's office. This is their business entities bill, and this fiscal note is going to look a little different from most others because it actually raises money. The fiscal note, and the bill has already been heard in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The bill raises some fees, actually lowers some fees. The most significant aspect of the bill, I think, is the fact that we had a temporary surcharge for technology to get their business systems going, and this makes the surcharge permanent, which I think was anticipated along for another two years to get their systems up and running so that more people can work online. Let me turn it over to Mr. Black, and he can kind of explain some of the aspects of the bill from the budget standpoint, what's going up and what's going down.
Welcome, Mr. Black. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor for the Office of the Secretary of State. I do have, if there's a page available, we have a letter to be distributed. As Senator Betzold mentioned, just the fiscal aspects of this, we have... In the fiscal note,
thank you.
We have a number of changes. There is a net positive. I want to focus on the three largest items. The first largest item, of course, is the temporary technology surcharge. This entire bill comes out of the online filing project we are doing at the Secretary of State's office to make all the filings possible online. When you go through a computer project like that, you wind up finding things, and that's what most of the rest of the bill is, trying to conform our processes and our fees internally. But the technology surcharge is what's paying for the online project. The letter that you're receiving right now is a letter of support from the Business Law Section Executive Council of the Minnesota State Bar Association. They are in favor of the continuation of the technology surcharge as long as it is paying for this online filing process. The next item in terms of significant changes is with respect to assumed names. Assumed names are a filing done with our office with respect to many of them are sole proprietorships or partnerships. It's the filing you make when you're doing business under a name other than your own name. and not just doing business. I think Governor Ventura, in fact, I know Governor Ventura filed an assumed name so that he could be recognized as Jesse Ventura. The assumed names have been on a 10-year cycle. We're moving. That's different from all the other filings we do, which are a permanent filing with an annual renewal. We're phasing in over 10 years, over the life of the current assumed names, a new system where they'll go to having that permanent status. As part of that, we are going to be taking off the renewal fee. So this is actually, to the user, a reduction in fee. There will be in the first fiscal year, this will go into effect approximately a year from now. There'll be a very small impact in 10. Then there's an increase in 11, and if you look into the out years, it's going to increase over that 10-year period. Finally, the third largest item is in the Uniform Commercial Code. We're changing the copy fees to be more consistent. Right now, the copy fees are per page. The computer can't figure out how many pages there are in a filing. It knows there's a filing. We have no idea, at least in electronic data, how many pages in the filing. So if we want to do this in an automated way, we've got to change how we charge for it. And so there's a benefit to the good there. We do have some other changes in the central notification system. We're eliminating the termination fee and instead making a small increase in the upfront fee, which actually, again, is one of these situations where the total fee will go down. That's approximately a wash. There's a small, I think, $1,500 a year net loss. We have foreign corporation withdrawals. We're eliminating the need to file the annual report before you file the withdrawal. Limited partnerships, the fee is being clarified there and being made to be the same between the foreign and the domestic limited partnerships. Right now, the foreigns actually pay less on some items. And so there's a net benefit to the general fund. The temporary technology surcharge is a wash because it's collected, but it goes to the Uniform Commercial Code account to pay for the online filing. And so that's the bill, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Betzel, I understand there's the A2 amendment.
There is a clarification amendment. I think Mr. Lundeen can explain it better than I can. It's a technical matter, so.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the A2 amendment does is it just makes a change in how the fees are collected by the Secretary of State. It's related to the International Student Exchange Program. And currently, the Secretary of State collects these fees, and they're put into a dedicated account in the general fund. And then the Secretary of State has access to these dollars. It's about $3,000 a year. And what this does instead is just make the fees a non-dedicated receipt to the general fund. And so that $3,000 will just go directly into the general fund. And then when we are setting the budget for the Secretary of State in the omnibus bill, we will instead just appropriate an additional $3,000 to the Secretary of State. And so this is revenue neutral, but it just makes it easier to track the dollars and to track the appropriation and reconcile it.
I'll move the A2 amendment.
Senator Betzel moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? Those in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill or any concerns. I've not been contacted. So if there are none, here's my plan, actually. I think that the language, ultimately, I'm going to probably have that rolled into the omnibus state government budget bill that we have before us. However, I'm trying to think ahead through the session, and I think there's some advantage to having a bill separately moved to the floor, if I can get it there, to that deals with some state government issues, so that if I happen to need a vehicle that sits on the Senate floor at the last minute where I have to use that as a state government budget bill, I can do that as well, too. So I'm just being upfront as to what my plans are. So I will move that Senate File 1224, as amended, be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee. As I say, just move it, the bill separately, but the language you'll see again as part of the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. Anybody here speaking for or against the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senate File 1224 is amended. Say aye.
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 Opposed? It's okay. Done.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Clark is here.
Okay. Gee. Senator Moore is here.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present to you Senate File 407. We call it the Money Mapping Bill, or the Children's Money Mapping Bill. Mr. Chair, I believe there's an A4 amendment.
Okay, let's see. There's an A4 amendment being passed out right now.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe there are also two oral amendments that we couldn't there wasn't time to put on the A4 amendment. I wonder if Mr. Bottom can help me with that, and if whoever is moving the A4 amendment.
I'll move the amendment.
Okay, well, there's a delete all amendment. Let's see what changes need to be made to be incorporated.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Moy, on page 1, line 5, you wanted to make it clear the department would need to use existing resources to do the work. So on page 1, line 5, after shall, you could insert, use existing resources available to the department. Two, and then on the bottom of page 1 on line 35, there'd be an additional recipient for the information after public safety, comma, insert corrections.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that.
Senator Pappas moves the A4 amendment as with the incorporations. Senator Moy, now, is this bill been anywhere before? Is this...
Mr. Chair, this bill was before the policy committee.
Okay, so before we adopt the delete all, I think you may have to explain the go into some detail to explain the bill then. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, the reason why it's a delete everything amendment was that in consultation with the MMB, they made some suggestions to take out some of the pieces in the bill as introduced, and that was before the policy committee to take out the geographic mapping piece of it, so that we're looking only at being able to look at the budgeting aspect of it. So they suggest that would help because the current budget system that is being contemplated has not yet built into it a geographic component, although they're interested in moving in that direction. So just to simplify the bill a little bit, we took out the geographic requirements out of it, and we're looking at just the budget or the money mapping piece of it without the overlay of the geographic requirement in the analysis. They also suggested instead of making this, assuming that it will be part of the budgeting program as they're trying to get it up and running, perhaps it might be more helpful to make it a pilot project that will then give them an opportunity to test out the budget program that they're currently putting in place. So at the suggestion of the staff from MMB, we actually took their suggested language, turned it into the amendment to make the money mapping project into a pilot project. And as you can see, the intention here is for them to experiment with the budgeting system, to use these guidelines as they experiment, and then they will come back with a report on how, on the specific for the funding streams with respect to children and youth. But they will also come back with an opinion regarding the potential for expanding resource mapping to other areas of the state budget. And in essence, staff assures me that the current budget system that is being contemplated should be robust enough to accommodate this request, but they believe that this would be a good opportunity to test the budget system, because I understand, based on feedback from other members of the legislature, that there will be an interest in not only looking at children and youth, but in also looking at other areas of the budget. And so that's why we have this amendment, and it's a delete everything amendment, only because we're now it was the cleanest way to tighten up or to narrow down the scope of the project.
Okay, now since we are adopting this as a delete-all, is there anybody who's here who wants to be heard on the A4 amendment, which is a delete-all amendment? Seeing none, Senator Pappas moves that the A4 amendment, as modified, be adopted. Is there further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Senator Moy, now again, we won't be going into the discussion about the merits of the program, but we will be looking at the assumption, the fiscal note. However, I suspect that the fiscal note might be changed as a result of the A4 amendment. The fiscal note showed that there was some staffing costs of about $68,000, and if this is becoming a pilot project, that may be affected. I don't know how this
is about the pilot project. This
is to the amendment.
Oh, so the fiscal note will assume the amendment. Okay, so it is drawn to the amendment now. Okay, so it's still a cost of $68,000. Okay. Mr. Lindeen, what's...
Well, I was just going to point out, with the oral amendment where we did direct the department to use existing resources available to accomplish this.
So there would not be a cost, then, to the bill. Okay. Well, Senator Maugham, then, we had originally talked about rolling this into Senate File 2, anything that had a cost. If it doesn't have a cost, it could probably travel on its own. So do you have any preference?
Mr. Chair, Senate File 2 is a reform bill, and if it is the desire of Senator Cohen to have this as part of that language, I am more than willing to show up in that bill, but I also ask that the committee also allow the jacket to travel on its own.
Okay. Well, we can do both. We can send the jacket ahead and then and incorporate the language into Senate File 2, and ultimately all the reform bills are going to be sent to the Rules Committee, where they're going to be somehow put together there. So. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on the budget aspects of Senate File 407? Okay. Is there a motion to recommend? Okay. Yeah. Senator Kubley moves that Senate File 407, as amended, be recommended passed and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion.
We're going to put it in Senate File 2.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Now, Senator Kubley moves that the language of Senate File 407 as amended be incorporated into Senate File 2. So discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Moss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
See you later. And now, Senator Clark, we have Senate File 1230, the Office of Strategic Long-Range Planning Provision Modifications. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there's an A6 amendment.
Okay. It's being retrieved. And
it's mostly a cleanup.
Okay.
Amendment.
Now, the bill was already heard in the policy committees, but it looks like a technical bill. It's technical amendment, so we'll wait to get it distributed. Do you have a copy of the A6 amendment, Senator Clark?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Bottom, this is clearly it's cleanup language, apparently. Is that what it is?
Mr. Chairman, much of what the amendment does is, if you look at the existing law on the bill, it refers to a director of the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning. Several years ago, the governor transferred the authority for the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning to the Commissioner of Administration. So this simply conforms with what has already been accomplished through the reorganization order.
Technical.
And Mr. Chairman, I will point out there are a few changes in the way some of the reporting requirements are made, beginning on the amendment on page 1, line 11. There are some additional requirements for the reports and the way they're just... I'll leave it at that. Additional requirements for some of those reports.
Somebody wish to move
I'll
the...
Move it.
Okay, Senator Pappas moves the A6 amendment. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill really is a continuation of some efforts several of us have been working on bipartisanly and with the administration over the last couple of years. One of the things it does, and knowing that there really aren't new resources right now, is to reinsert the concept that we really should be doing long-range planning. And the function would take place within the Department of Administration, and we would be requiring essentially it being done every 5 years. The thought right now is because there are people scattered throughout different departments, that part of what they do is long-range planning is it would be there'd be an ability to bring those folks together and hopefully come up with a good strategy for us. That is what subdivision one is. Section one. The state demographer, one of the things, and Mr. Gillespie is here, so he will be able to speak for himself, but one of the things that has been contemplated for a while is releasing a demographic forecast in conjunction with the finance forecast in November. We think that that would be an important thing for us to be getting a better handle on more broadly, not just on the economic forecast, but demographic as well. And then in Section 3, there is, again, the continuation with regard to milestones. We're continuing to look for ways, working with public and private partnerships, to provide better information for legislators, for state agencies, but also for local elected officials and other entities that may be trying to do their own work. And then, frankly, starting to figure out how are we measuring up? How can we connect? So a couple other things that you should know. One is that Wilder has been working on a Compass project that has a number of indicators that are similar. We're working on continuing to figure out how we can connect the dots there and have some savings, but also build on some good work that's happening through their project. And then working in conjunction with the University of Minnesota to be figuring out how we can better utilize their demographic center so that we both can perhaps do a bit more work than we can do right now in state government alone, but also be preparing a new generation of demographers. And I don't know if members have any other questions for me, but you might want to have Mr. Gillespie.
Well, and again, we're not going to focus too much on the policy, but the fiscal note does indicate there's expenditures for 4 new staff and associated costs. And so that's a rather significant cost that would start in fiscal year 10 and continue every fiscal year after that. So I don't know if you, Mr. Gillespie, wish to – we need to find out about that because, as I say, within the bill itself, within this budget division, we would not have the payment for that. I could, as I say, roll that into Senator Cohen's bill and see what happens to it later on. But, you know, if I lay it over, there's not much I can do with it, with our negative targets that we get here. Mr. Gillespie, did you wish to on the budget issues?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I prepared the fiscal note for this. The amendment does change the nature of this. The original wording of the language not only created an office, but required the appointment of a director. That is no longer in or the amendment would remove that section, and doing sort of quick back of the notebook calculations on the fly, I would estimate that would take over half of the cost indicated in the fiscal note out, that would reduce the amount by about $210,000, not including computer rent, things like that, which would add about another $22,000. So about $235,000 would be the reduction of the impact of the amendment. Just for financial purposes for the fiscal note, I also divided the remaining additional cost into two segments. One is the bill does make several additional requirements for information. One is a long-run plan, which requires public input and input of other departments to be done on a regular basis, an annual review of trends and implications for the state for budgetary purposes, and reinvigorating Minnesota milestones and the Minnesota milestones indicators. My assumption was that would require about one mid-level professional staff person to do that. It also the third item that the bill include would be the annual long-run forecast in conjunction with the state economist forecast in November, and that would also require some additional staffing. Right now, I have that assumed at one mid-level staff person and computer and related kinds of cost.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Clark.
My intent was for this to be rolled into Senator Cohen's bill, but we also are working on whittling this down to zero because we do looking for external resources to be helpful with this. The milestones component, the intent of the bill is to actually clarify what the state is doing. We had some anticipated actions that certainly through no fault of Mr. Gillespie's didn't necessarily happen in conjunction with our budget sheets, and so we're trying to give better clarity to what we're hoping would happen there. But both of the other two things are important for the future of our state, and that's why we're trying to figure out how we can be working externally to be getting some additional resources here.
Now, Mr. Gillespie, I'm just trying to figure out what would the cost of the bill be now, you know, as you've lowered the cost. I mean, there's still some costs. I was figuring it sounds like about $200,000 or something, but I can't quite tell. Do you have a ballpark estimate what the bill would cost as it is before us now?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, the calculations, like I say, on the back of the page here, my quick calculations, I would estimate around $180,000.
$180,000, okay.
In that approximate range.
Which we don't have. Okay. Gotcha.
And that would include the two components that would be potentially separable components.
Okay. I see the commissioners come up. Commissioner, do you want to weigh in on this one, or are you just kind of checking in?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Dana Badgerow, Department of Administration. It is true, as Senator Clark says, we've been working on this now for almost 2 years in an effort to revitalize the milestones, and we did prepare a report looking at the old milestones, which was submitted on March 6th, and it talked about either one of two courses, either going back and really revisiting the old milestones, updating them, getting new public input, and or piggybacking on the work that the Compass work that the Wilder Foundation is doing, which is now going statewide. If we were to choose that latter course, and if we were to be able to engage some of the resources at the university, it would, in fact, substantially reduce, if not eliminate, the need for additional resources here. But those are still ifs, and we're still working on them.
Well, I can only deal with what I got performing at the moment. So,
well, Mr. Chair, I think the amendment that you put on Senator Cohen's bill will help us out for the moment. As we're getting closer to rules, perhaps we'll have this finally figured out.
Okay. So it's your desire to just have it amended to Senator Cohen's bill then?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Rust moves that Senate file 1230 as amended be amended to Senate file 2. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay. Well, Senator Clark, did you have a desired? Okay. You don't want the bill to move separately. Just
Mr. Chair, I think based on what I heard you say to Senator Moy, and like what happened in rules today, I believe that if this is going to rules, what we did in rules with the mandate bills, we actually vended them on separately to that bill, and they came. So I wonder if we do need to do something different, because we figured there that we're at least being held somewhere to be able to go separately. So,
I mean, we're ready to move Senator Cohen's bill out. Do you want to have your bill move separately as well, too?
We'll
think about it for a second. Yeah. The motion before Senator Rest moves at Senate File 2 as amended be recommended pass be referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Clark, did you have any thoughts now?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Why don't we go ahead and have it go separately, too, if we
okay.
just
Senator,
in case.
Senator Rest moves at Senate File 1230 as amended be recommended and passed at the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Clark. Do we have
Senator
Rest's amendment? Yes. We have Senator Rest's amendment. Senator Saltzman is here? Okay, let's. Senator Saltzman. This is Senate File 1052. And Senator Saltzman, your bill has been heard in other committees. We're mainly looking at the fiscal issues here for your bill. So, Senator Saltzman, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1052, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for the leadership you have taken on teacher statewide health insurance and some of the rough roads it has traveled, the roadblocks that it has hit in terms of a veto pen, really encouraged me to look at some of the issues that have continued to come up in terms of people not understanding what exactly the health insurance plan meant. So this a past session, I did introduce this bill in very similar language, And then when I saw that Education Minnesota was bringing forth that there was a potential of using either CGIP or PEEP, and I understand that you just heard a bill earlier for inclusion in PEEP, there continues to be a lot of questions about how this would work, what it would cost, what would be the impact on teachers. And as a result, I brought this bill forward to get it. It does have a $79,000 fiscal note on it, and Mr. Morocco is here from Department of Finance to address some of those things. And I also have some teachers here who obviously would like more information about how this plan would potentially work before we as a legislature would pass it. So that is my attempt with this bill of bringing it forward to have some more firm information about it, what the plan would look like, which hopefully would bring people to the table to have a better discussion and build support for something, because certainly we are all concerned about health insurance for teachers and how it's impacting school districts.
Well, and again, we're not going to we got started late today. We still have another bill to process before we finish. And so we will not be spending time talking about the overall policy because it has been through the policy committees. Mr. Morocco, did you wish to testify on the fiscal note, or does anybody want to? Because we have a fiscal note of $79,000, which is a cost here, which this budget division does not have the money for, to be honest with you. Now, just as a comment, I do remember when I carried the statewide bill that there was a doer still existed. There was a House committee that had some hearing on it, and they weren't sure this could be done or not, but I guess that's what the whole purpose is. Mr. Morocco, did you want to comment on the fiscal note at all?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have anything specific.
Okay.
I think the note essentially speaks.
Okay, so but basically this is not something that can be absorbed. You need $79,000 to do it. Is that correct? Okay. Well, members, I'm going to offer the A1 amendment. Mr. Rolstein, here's Senator Rolstein, you're going to have to chair for a moment. The A1 amendment will provide some funding mechanism, Senator Salzman, for your bill.
Mm-hmm.
This bill, ultimately, I recommend it goes back to the Finance Committee and then have the, I don't know if the E12 Budget Division has looked at it yet, but basically this would come out of the E12 funding formulas to help find the $79,000 to pay for your bill.
Well, I am interested in this amendment. I appreciate that you have attempted to bring forward something. We are actually discussing our omnibus bill in about 15 or 20 minutes or sometime today. And I certainly think that this is something that we could move forward with, because the issue here is if statewide health insurance is good and if it's going to be good for school districts, are we willing to study it and really understand the cost? So I appreciate your efforts to bring something forward to keep this bill moving, Mr. Chair.
I'm just trying to help you out.
I know you are, and you've been very nice to me so far, Mr. Chair.
Members, we have before us the A1 amendment. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion adopted.
I guess anything further? Any further discussion? Anybody else want to be heard on Senate File 1052 as amended? Mr. Rolstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Morocco. Because
Senator Mr. Rolstein, I'm going to be needed downstairs in the Health Committee in a couple of minutes to present a bill, and then we have Senator Rest has got her the last bill on the agenda. So why don't you take my spot here? You process Senator Rest's bill, and I think that bill. There's a fiscal note in here, but we'll just have to do something here. But don't mess things up. Don't mess things up. Okay, you're in charge. Okay.
I chaired a school board for a year, but anyhow. Okay, there's a motion before us. Any questions on the bill? I do have one, Mr. Morocco, and that's, I hadn't realized this, but in your when you did your fiscal note, you addressed this study that had been done in 2004. Was that done in the state of Minnesota, or is that a national study, or what information did you have about that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the Redner and Anders study that was done and completed in 2004, and it was actually asked by the legislature to conduct that study. It included agencies such as the Department of Commerce, included Education Minnesota, included many bodies that were really there to study the concepts of pooling the districts.
A follow-up question would be, would you feel that that's an adequate study, or do you think that there needs to be more study for implementation of this?
Mr. Chair, I think exactly as you indicated, it really is in the implementation. It's really taking the information that the study put together, which is really the background premise about the overall risk of the group, how you might pool, the various kind of financial arrangements that could be available. It doesn't really address the actual implementation of a pool of 300 school districts, at $1 billion a year. And so really what I'm recommending and what the fiscal note really indicates is that there's really a wide range of things that could be studied, and the bill isn't specifically asking us to do anything in particular in terms of what we are to study. So this is really reflecting what I see would be the necessary steps that MMB would need to take and would need to resolve in order to actually implement a group of this size. And that's largely why, given a range of zero to about $500,000, we've estimated about $80,000 as being the appropriate amount to at least address any of the issues that MMB would be faced with implementing the bill, and sort of ties back into the prior bill that we heard, the actual PEEP bill that's out there. Much of what you see in that fiscal note is some of our preliminary analysis of what it might cost to implement the program, but again, it's all based on assumptions without really any ability to clarify and to ask questions about how this program might actually work.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions? Anybody who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Okay, we have a motion before us for Senate file 1052 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next we have the Senator Rest. Senator Rest will be before us with Senate File 1600. Welcome to the State Budget.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1600 is familiar to all but two of the members of the committee, as five of us sit on the State and Local Government Committee that passed this bill to the Finance Committee last week. Senate File 1600 is a bill that proposes that Minnesota adopt technology accessibility standards for the state, and authorizes rulemaking to do that. In addition, there is a task force, and those accessibility standards, by the way, just briefly in Section 10, are reference the federal law and the federal standards for accessibility technology accessibility standards. There is an advisory committee that is in Section 12 that is set forward, and then there is the to give advice and to study how such standards could be brought into could come into Minnesota's state system, and also there are funds appropriated from the Telecommunications Access Minnesota Fund for the work of that committee. Nevertheless, there is a fiscal note beyond that members have in their packets. We have been working during this hearing, as a matter of fact, to reduce that fiscal impact. And Mr. Chairman, I would want to offer two amendments that I think will soften the state general fund fiscal impact at this point, and I would hope it after they're adopted and we have some testimony, which we will try and keep specifically from our two witnesses to the justification for the cost of the of this bill. But first of all, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
Senator Rust, I've got the A3 in front of me.
There's an A2 amendment as well.
Okay.
Shall I do the A3 amendment first, yeah. Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rust, the A3 supplants the A2 amendment.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you. Forget the A2, Mr. Chairman. We're just going to deal with the
with the A3 amendment.
And to that amendment, could you address it?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bodern, I wonder if you would explain how this amendment has evolved and what the impact of it is.
Mr. Chairman, the first two items on the amendment, the amendment to page 2, line 23, is just that's a concern from the Department of Administration that just clarifies they won't be required to use the accessibility measures unless they're applicable to the particular contract they're evaluating. Then the amendment change amends page 6, line 6 of the bill. That's just a technical amendment to specify the section of law where the rules will be required. The substance of the amendment begins on line 6 of the amendment, the new paragraph B, and this impacts the entire bill. All of the other sections in the bill reference the definition of accessibility that will be created in rule by referencing the federal law. And then this new paragraph B specifies that, first of all, the rules can't take effect until July 1st of this year, and that they would apply to subsequent procurements or substantial modifications or enhancements of technology after the rules become effective. There is another sentence that clarifies that if a procurement or development process has begun before the effective date of the rules would not apply to that process. Finally, the rules may not what's stated here is the rules may not impose an undue burden on the state. The federal standard that the rules will incorporate also specifies that the accessibility standards cannot impose an undue burden. And just for reference, that's in I think I've got the site. It's section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act. And the definition provided for undue burden that would appear in the rules is that they may not undue burden is defined as meaning significant difficulty or expense, including but not limited to difficulty or expense associated with technical feasibility.
Okay, members, we have the A3 amendment before us. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oops. Motion carries. Senator Rust, do you have another amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of witnesses, and I hope they'll keep their testimony to the justification for the costs.
If they could identify them.
Relative to the importance of this project.
Thank you, Senator Rust. If they could address the committee and identify themselves.
You can go first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jamie Taylor, and I am the Access and Technology Specialist with Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. I am deafblind. Thank you. Okay. The commission contacted 18 states that have adopted accessibility standards, and we asked them how much it costs their states to implement their standards. And we, inside your packet, you will see the street marks from Oklahoma. Oklahoma said that, one, there is no fiscal impact for their advisory committee. Two, they know of no state agencies that have hired full-time employees to implement their standards. And three, that there were actual cost savings because they did not have to retrofit past bought software. Also, I should note that Oklahoma is considered the gold standard for the whole entire United States in terms of statewide accessibility of their sites. Also, the money requested is going to be in the bill will go to accessibility testing, which will find the most best use of costs, but while providing the highest level of accessibility, while not providing an undue burden to the state, and also protecting the state a little bit in terms of lawsuits.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would point out that within the last couple of years, the Target Corporation was sued for not complying with accessibility standards and settled out of court for some $8 million.
Okay.
Senator Rest and members, there's another committee getting ready to move into this room, so we're punching up the against it. Did we have a discussion on the cost of the bill? And I know, Senator Rest, you had some thoughts.
We did, Mr. Chairman. We did adopt the A3 amendment, which I think is going to mitigate the cost substantially. But I am willing to keep working with the Department of Administration and OET to reduce it even further and just have the appropriation from the special fund continue in the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that we could continue to work on it but move the bill to the Finance Committee at this point.
As opposed to just holding it here until
yes, I think
okay.
so.
Okay, so you would like to move it to the Finance Committee, and obviously, as long as there's a cost there, it's not going to be able to move out of the committee until we figure out what we're going to do.
Exactly.
Here, so. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on the fiscal issues regarding Senate File 1600? Is there any discussion on it? Hearing none, Senator Rest moves it to Senate File 1600 as amended, be recommended pass, be referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Let's see. Next Monday, we have more bills to do.
Thank you.
The omnibus bills. The governor's office going to be in? Okay. The governor's office is going to be in to testify, and they're part of the budget on Monday. We have a number of bills. We'll be rolling out a proposed omnibus bill, which is everything you've already seen pretty much already, so there shouldn't be any big surprises in it. That'll be next Monday, and then after that, we're actually on our break. So see you then. Meeting adjourned.